going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett. And you know me, you know, I love to use this podcast as an excuse to go deep on the beautiful game, the world's game. That would be soccer in Canada, football in most of the world. And Canada is hosting the world. Less than a year from now, the World Cup in 2026 is coming to Canada, Toronto, and Vancouver, as well as the United States and Mexico. And to get ourselves ready, because we don't have a lot of best competition in between, we've got, let's be honest, a made-up tournament. Shout out to the folks at MLSC for giving us more soccer content to consume. The Canadian Shield is here, and it was handed out. So it randomly is not a shield. Like, you've named this tournament, this trophy, the Shield, and then you just made up a trophy. It looks kind of like the original World Cup trophy, in that it doesn't really have any distinct personality or characteristics. But it was awarded in somewhat awkward fashion because it's a four-team tournament with Europe and, you know, Africa and Oceania represented, along with, obviously, Canada. But you don't play all four teams because we don't have the time to have too many games before the Gold Cup, which is the trophy that we really care about. So we go to plus minus, which meant that, or goal difference in soccer, please don't come for me, soccer stands. Canada knew they essentially were going to win the tournament after the first game. And they just didn't have to lose by two. And if they lost in penalties, which they did, they would still win. So they tied the game and lost the penalties, but won the tournament, which gave us a very awkward, subdued celebration, I suppose. Anyways, the fact that we've got great, intense soccer is amazing. Before we get to the architect of the team and the leader into the tournament that we really care about before the World Cup now, that is the Gold Cup, and if you're trying to follow at home and you're saying to yourself, well, I thought we cared about Copa and I thought we cared about Nations League. Yeah, we cared about all of them. We care about the trophy that's right in front of us now, because it's been 2 decades since the men have lifted a trophy. Before we get to Jesse Marsh's show, the Canadian Shield, if you had to give it a letter grade for relevance, it would be what?
Ooh, a letter grade for relevance. I'm guessing like a D-. A D-. That's, I don't want to go so hard as give it a fail, but I'll be completely honest with you. I did not know it was happening until after it was over. And I only realized it was happening because I saw Ulrich Chomche was apparently at the event. That's literally the only reason I even knew it was happening. And it was happening here in Toronto, all places. So maybe that's on me, but yeah, I'm getting a D- for me.
Well, then I get an F, because it is my job to talk about these things in advance to get you excited for them. So I will make no mistake and make sure that everyone is excited for the Gold Cup and obviously the World Cup, because the benefit, I will give Canada Soccer an A for this, is that we saw a lot of great players, a lot of squad depth. The squad was rotated quite a bit from game one to game two. There were 10 changes to the side, and most performances, if we were grading them, we would give much higher than your D-, you very difficult grader. But ultimately, the grades that matter are Jesse Marsh's, because he is evaluating who is going to be in the side a year from now in the World Cup. And not just who's going to make the team or be on the bubble. What's that starting 11 going to be? What's that formation going to be? And what I loved about the Canada Shield, and I expect it to continue in the Gold Cup, is the amount of soccer sickles like me who are on social media arguing about who should be dropped and who should never play for the national team again and who needs a shout and who needs a full 90 minutes and what the formation should be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe the best player the country has ever produced on the man's side, Alfonso Davies, was not even there. So how does Jesse Marsh deal with this? Good problem to have. Squad that you're still trying to figure out before the World Cup, but lots of real interesting options. We'll find out. This is the information that you can all take to your various soccer group chats, because you're going to hear it from the horse's mouth himself, Jesse Marsh, and you'll have no excuse to not know that the World Cup is here, because Jesse Marsh is going to get you excited for it. Let's go deep on all things Canada men's soccer, less than a year out from hosting a World Cup, with Jesse Marsh. So Jesse, your travels take you to beautiful Halifax, God's country, as many people believe. In Canada, taking the national team on the road, so to speak, and having that as the location, what is the significance of where you are and what you're looking to do?
So I took a coaching clinic tour in January across the country, and was just trying to share the things that we had been accomplishing with the national team, the men's national team. And everywhere I went, everyone kind of said, hey, when are we going to see the team? When are we going to be able to see our heroes? And Halifax was the first stop we made, and I could see the enthusiasm for the game here and for the team. And I just was looking for opportunities to come here. And so this camp, I think, worked well. And it was made it a little bit easier for the guys coming from Europe to meet here, the guys coming from MLS. So we're happy to be here. The reception from everyone in this town and in this area of the world has been fantastic. And we're excited. We have an open training tonight, and we're excited to get out there and show the team how good our show the fans how good our team is.
There's lots of excitement, especially when you look at the roster and the level of names included. When you look at these camps and these opportunities, whether it's the 60 or getting the number pared down, how much are you thinking towards the Gold Cup and winning it? And how much are you balancing making sure you are taking a look at people, ramping up for obviously what is a massive summer next summer? Can you do both at the same time?
Yeah, look, we have several objectives for this summer. And now that I've been the national team coach for a year, I realize that these summer windows are our best opportunities to really develop what we're trying to create. So, you know, we certainly are trying to incorporate some new players into this. So we'll have Promise David, Daniel Jevison, Jaden Nelson in with the group, and certainly trying to broader the overall player pool so that we have more players that we feel like we can count on at a high level for next summer. And then, you know, it's about also preparing the team for the best kinds of matches. And then, yeah, making sure that in the Gold Cup that we are absolutely on a hunt for the title. So that's what our goal is. That's what our motivation is. And it's been relatively clear. I haven't had to convince any of the players that that's what we should be thinking of. They are all aligned. Everybody wants to achieve a big goal, and we're going to go after it.
Talk about convince. In your role, you are, in a way, a recruiter. I'm sure you're now very familiar with dual national details and the residency of many players around and what the FIFA rule book says. I've never in my time being a fan or covering the sport seen more Reddit conversations about who is out there that could possibly play for Canada and excitement for people who choose to. What have those conversations been like with agents, with players, and in the research that you and your group has to do to make it a viable option?
Yeah, I mean, the whole team in some way, shape, or form are first, second generation type people. And, you know, we've also recognized that there were some undiscovered talents out there that had some Canadian connections, and you know, so we've done a good job of unearthing who those people are, and then we've tried to determine which ones we think would fit us the best. So it's not like we've just recruited every person out there that has some kind of Canadian ties. It's more about trying to find the right kind of people that would be fit what we're doing, that would be excited about this project. It's not just a career decision. It's a life decision to represent the Canadian national team. And it's often a family decision. So It's been fun to get to know some of these kids and more importantly, to see how passionate they are about the idea of playing for Canada and of representing the Canadian national team. So that part's been good. And I think it's continued to bring a really good mentality and vibe overall in what the team is.
You're able to recruit in a different way, someone with ties to Canada, but like you is American, and Michael Bradley, and people were excited to see him as part of the setup. What were those conversations like with Michael, and what do you think his future is, you know, on the touchline in the game?
Yeah, so Michael and I have known each other for a long time. I played for his dad, and I met Michael first when he was 4 years old, if you can believe that. So, he's almost like family. He's looking to start his coaching career. You know, we have kept in contact a lot over the last year. And while he's thinking about how to pursue options, how to continue developing himself as a coach. And so I'd offered him the opportunity to come in with us along with David Edgar in this stretch. So, you know, we've tried to really also invite as many young Canadian coaches to be a part of this as well. And one of the cool things is I always have new players and new staff introduce themselves in front of the team. And both of those guys gave really inspiring talks to the team about their connections with the Canadian national team, their motivations for being here, their support of everything that's being that's been happening over the last year plus, and their desire to support this program, this project, this movement in every way they possibly can. So it's exciting to feel that energy around the team and around the program right now. And we're trying to honor it every day by making sure that we put everything into being as good as we possibly can and continuing to make the country proud.
You know, the other exciting announcement that we've had to start 2025 for me, and I think one that has lasting impacts, is, you know, the announcement around what you can do with the partnership with someone like Jeffrey Dyfer and Boy Wonder and the music series, and having some of that shine go on the program, but also raising money for the grassroots. It's something you generally seemed excited about, showcasing the sport in the program in a different light. Why does this opportunity seem to be something that the Federation should be doing at this time?
Well, I can speak first on behalf of myself. You know, one of the reasons that I was really excited about taking this job was not just that I believed that the first team had great potential, but that the country as it needed more support, and that it was a project that would engage me with so much more than just wins and losses, and it was an opportunity to leave a lasting impact on many lives in this country and to create a better foundation for the possibilities of what young boys and girls can be dreaming about in this sport. So, you know, that's why I've been touring around the country, talking to a lot of people, sharing a lot of what we're doing, having open training sessions, using the best resource we have, which is our players and our national teams, as an opportunity to show everybody all the good things that are happening. So that part has been a real joy, and I've met a lot of like-minded people, and I am American, and you know, I don't fully understand everything about being Canadian, but what I'm finding is that there are a lot of similar ideals and concepts of what life is and how to treat people and what decency is and high character and how working together is a fantastic thing to have in your life. So I'm just so thankful to be the coach. I'm trying to represent it the right way every day. I'm trying to represent Canadian, mindset and communities all over the country the right way. And then we know the best way that we can do that is by winning games and being good in the 2026 World Cup. But we think of this project as so much more than just that. So, you know, it's been fun, and I'm really thankful how well people have welcomed me here.
It's funny. It's almost verbatim to what Casey Stoney has said. You've really, you know, opened your arms in the program to her even before she was officially on board, and you had her with you and the technical team and the staff last summer. What was her involvement like, and what has that relationship been like?
Yeah, she's great. You know, even as we were recruiting her and speaking with her about what this is and what, you know, not just what a national team job is versus a club team, but also what it means to be a Canadian national team coach, you know, I had some experiences under my belt that I could share with her from all these different perspectives. And then, you know, trying to say to her that Kevin and I, Kevin Blue and I, our secretary general, were really looking for another partner in this to help take Canada soccer the next step in the history of what we're trying to build. So I think she's the perfect person. She's been really committed to everything that we've tried to build here. She's very humble in her approach of representing what this country is. I think we're learning a lot from each other in our respective positions with our respective teams on what's good, what can get better. You know, I mean, it's just an awesome thing to have a bunch of people in the organization that all know that we have a lot to do and there's big potential, but most importantly, that we're all willing to do it together and commit ourselves entirely. So it's like our own little team. And so far it's been pure enjoyment.
Let's zero in on the team a little bit more before I let you go. And I can't help but in my Canadian soccer group chats constantly throw out what I think the best starting 11 should be. Mm-hmm. You're the person waking up every day thinking about it. How often are you thinking about, okay, when you know we're match one in the World Cup, this is who I think will be leaving the tunnel right now? Or are you looking at it a little bit more holistically and not allowing your mind to go there yet?
No, I think in any team, you're always trying to develop the overall breadth of the squad and then trying to also narrow in how to make sure your best players are in the best positions to succeed. So, you know, I mean, on most days, I would say I'm fixated on, you know, pushing the entire group to continue to develop so that we have more and more players that we can count on. And in tournament phase, when you know the games come fast, having a group that has big experiences and knows how to handle matches and is ready for anything. Because even like with injuries and suspensions and a lot of different things, you never know, you know, exactly who's going to be available. However, yes, of course, like, you know, every time I see Promise David scoring goals, Jonathan David scoring goals, Kyle Larin playing great, Jacob Schaffelberg playing so well, Tajon Buchanan getting back on track, Ali Ahmed and Jaden Nelson and Sam Adekugbe all playing well with Vancouver, Tani Alawashi, you know, the goalkeepers performing, like, of course, it gets me excited about, you know, the development of the group, the development of each individual, the potential of the team as a whole. And, you know, I mean, the best problem a coach can have is the headache of trying to decide who your best players are because you have so many. So we're getting closer to that every day, and that's a wonderful, wonderful situation to have here with the Canadian national team.
Well, I think you just named, like, 7 or 8 attacking players. So, yeah, yeah. I suppose the depth there is real. I want to flip to the other end of the pitch. And if you had to play a game that mattered right now, you'd be playing it without 3 of your 4 first choice, I suppose, back yep. line. What opportunity does that present? And what are you looking for in terms of the profile of some of the people that are going to get some looks this summer?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, we've played almost entirely with Alphonso Davies, Derek Cornelius, Moise Bombido, and Alistair Johnston. And for me, that's been the foundation of our success with this team. Now with 3 of those gone, Derek's still here. You know, it's an opportunity for some of the players that have sort of been either subs or had limited minutes to show that they're able to step in to the big feet of those players. So, and I think overall this will be important for our team, because if you ask me who's likely to be our back line, it's probably going to be those 4 names, but we're going to have to make sure that we develop a broader group in that back line. So, you know, we've got young guys like Luke de Fougerol and Jamie Knight-Labelle, who I think have big potential to have really strong summers. Then we have guys like Sam Adekugbe and Richie Larea, who are big names in the national team and I think can continue to have big roles, and we need to continue to push their development. And then there's guys like Nico Segor and Zoe Bassong, who we know have big potential, a really quality, young, intelligent, high-profile players that we want to make sure we give them every opportunity to succeed and be here as well. So, you know, there's some big opportunities for the defenders in this summer. We will get Alistair back in about 2 weeks, but overall, those guys are going to be counted out in a big way, and they're going to need to perform.
Let's zero in on some of those names. You mentioned Fonzie, and Canadians are certainly wanting to know how his rehab is going, and at the same time, rehab is of the relationship with him and his agent relative to the program. You have a progress report on all things Alphonso Davies.
Yeah, look, I think first of all, we were so disappointed and bummed that when we all found out the result, and I think everybody involved was shocked, whether it was Bayern, whether it was Alphonso and his team, whether it was us here at Canada Soccer. So then, you know, the mindset for me right away is to shift, okay, how do we support him? How do we help him? And, you know, it took him a little bit longer to shift into that mindset, because I think it was really hard for him to accept this injury. And so, you know, now as time's gone on, I think he gets it. Like, this is part of the game. And unfortunately, everybody kind of goes through moments like this. And you always have to use them to make yourself stronger, to reinvest in yourself in ways that aren't just about being on the pitch every day. So you do that physically in your rehab, but you also do it mentally, you do it psychologically, you know, and for him, I think it what's important is that he also continues in his leadership path. Like, even though he's not going to be around this team, that in his own way, he continues to mature from a leadership perspective, so that next summer he's prepared for everything we need from him as captain. But I can report that physically, his rehab is going well. He got rid of the crutches about 2 weeks ago, so he's doing more active recovery protocols in Germany. He's feeling strong. We've had a lot of good conversations. You know, he'll be ready to get back as quickly as he can. And he's such an incredible athlete that we all know that, you know, if anyone can come back bigger and stronger and better, that it's Alphonso.
Pumbido also not available due to injury, the only player to play every minute in the Marsh era. It probably could use a break given the amount of football that he's played over the last year. His level, when you look at him, what's the ceiling in terms of his game?
Yeah.
If he develops?
Ceiling, there is no ceiling. That's his ceiling. He is, in terms of world defenders, I think he has all the tools possible to be elite, like best in the world. And so, you know, for him, it's a bit about, you know, mindset and determination and work ethic. And then also, I think, belief, self-belief, you know, because he will carry with him this moniker that, like, oh, he's a late developer and he wasn't a pro until he was 23 years old and he's got a lot to learn. But he's a really bright kid. And he is determined to get better and better, and he's a good learner. And physically, he has every tool that is necessary to be the best. So, you know, there's a reason why he's played every minute that he's been available for us. It's because we really believe in him. We know how good he is. We know how high the potential is. And we really want to, every time we're with him, we want to continue to challenge him and engage him to be the best. So, yeah, we'll miss him. We'll miss him this summer, but I felt in the long-term project, him having a little bit of a break, being able to recover. He's got a big season at Nice and trying to qualify for Champions League and then compete in Europe. So there's a lot ahead for Moyes in the next year, and certainly it's more important that he's ready for next summer than it is this summer.
And lastly, as I let you go, you only get so many opportunities as an international manager with these teams, and you've got competition against the calendars, the clock ticks to next year. What does success look like this summer? As you send these players away back to their clubs, you'll know this will be a successful summer if you see what?
Well, look, it's going to be we've really challenged the team that no matter who plays, that the understanding of roles and the identity that we're creating, and from that's from a leadership, from a mental, from a psychological, from a tactical, from a technical perspective, that everyone is exactly clear on how they fit and what their roles are on the day. So from just a development standpoint, that is going to continue to be very important. And the more that we can broaden the group that really understands that, that will be helpful for us next summer. In addition, we're here together this summer to win the Gold Cup, period. And we're doing everything we can every day to make sure we give ourselves the best chance to do that.
Can't wait to watch and can't wait for Canadians to see some new names from the program that become household names. All the best, Jesse. Thank you so much for this.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Jesse Marsh. That was a lot to take in. I hope you are as excited as I am, because let's be honest, there is a Club World Cup going on this summer as well. Many of the nations are missing some top players because of the Club World Cup. Many players who play in Europe have decided to skip the Gold Cup. Not sure if you've seen the infighting, the real housewives of the U.S. men's national soccer team continues with pundits fighting with parents, fighting with players, et cetera, et cetera. Long story short, those aren't issues in Canada. We have a very strong side, and so it should be an exciting tournament, and one where, as you heard from Jesse, we fully expect to lift a trophy. We shall see. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back with more on Going Deep.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Grandma and Granddad. And it is golfing season. Great weather in Canada. So not only are people out playing, but if you're like me, you're more likely to be on your couch consuming, because this is the Open time with so much great representation in the Canadian Open, in the U.S. Open. And that representation is not just players, although we are proud of our Canadian players. It's caddies as well. And I wanted to dive into that with one of the best caddies holding any type of passport on the tour, and that's Dave Markle. Now, Dave is the right-hand man, as many of you know, for a tour winner himself that's from Canada, in Nick Taylor, who's had a great season, highlighted probably by his fourth place finish at the Memorial Tournament earlier this summer. And Dave's pretty cool because he was a high-level player himself, but he has the ability to diagnose not just great pros games, but average Joes like myself. He's teamed up with Sleeman to do that very thing. It's a campaign where they're raising a can to golf's ultimate real ones, the caddies, of course, and you can have your game and your swing analyzed by Dave Markle. Now, I caught up with him. Maybe I selfishly used some of this time to get some tips for myself, which you can benefit from as well, so don't hate. But I really wanted to know about the psyche of a great player like Nick Taylor and what the caddy's role is. It's not just about yardage. It's not just about what club to use. It's about getting around the green, but maybe even getting out of your own head. So let's go into the mind of Dave Markle as we go deep on all things Canadian caddies.
So Dave, you have an amazing job where you get to see and work with the best players in the world and see the best courses in the world and some of the amazing locations that the tour goes to. And I love this new initiative and partnership that you're a part of, because when I think of Sleeman golf, I think of consuming it while golfing. But now you've partnered to be able to help everyday people with their golf game. When you look at the average person, what are the things you're immediately eyeing to say, okay, these are things I need to be evaluating immediately to help with their various swings?
Yeah, you know, of course, when you think of Sleeman, it goes kind of hand in hand with beer, a nice summer day, enjoying a nice pint on the course. You know, the average player, I think a lot of the average player just needs some basic help with you know, their grip and setup and alignment and kind of weight distribution throughout their swing. And that kind of simple, like, fundamentals goes a long way. And it kind of helps, like, increase the golfer's experience. And you know, when they get some of that stuff squared away, it allows them to have more fun on the course, right?
No question, because I do love the idea of golf, having a great drink and a nice summer day and being with friends and having nice fashion, but also some of the most frustrating experiences non-parenting have been on the golf course. How similar or dissimilar are the tips that you'd be giving to people via, you know, this opportunity to the tips that you'd be giving to, you know, Nick Taylor or a pro that you're working with?
Yeah, it's kind of apples to oranges, I guess. I mean, it's the same, you know, golf is golf, but, you know, when you're dealing with a skill set that is that different, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you would tell an amateur player that you wouldn't tell Nick, obviously. You know, you just try to support, and it's player support in both ways, but just two different kinds. You know, with Nick, like, obviously he has a very high golf IQ and his name's on the golf bag for a reason. He knows what he's doing out there. You try to kind of talk to him between shots and keep him in a good headspace and just really support him and make sure that when it comes time to hit the shot, he's hitting the right shot and he feels 100% confident. You know, with an amateur player, I used to caddy at the club level a little bit before I started doing it professionally out here. You kind of assess a person's game on the first tee, a quick assessment. And depending on how the golf course is, it's, you know, you just try to make it as easy for them as possible and try to help them if they need it with their swing or if they just kind of need it with course management and get them in the right spots. Hopefully you can save them a few shots and they can have a little better time on the course, you know? So that's why I'm excited about this partnership with Sleeman. They've already got roots in golf, being a Golf Canada sponsor. You know, with their Real Ones campaign, they're trying to celebrate people who work hard behind the scenes. And when you connect that with golf, it's kind of what all caddies are striving to do for their players and support them and, you know, be real with the guys out there and help them as much as possible. So, for the month of June, we're going to, Canadians can send their swings to, Sleeman, beer on Instagram, and you can send a video or, a golf tip. And I'm going to provide some real time feedback.
You were a real one, as a player, as high as 12th in the world on the amateur, golf rankings. How much do you think back to that time as a player, and do you miss it?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, I think when you're in it and you're, you know, back then it was like my purpose is to play the PGA Tour and play golf at the highest level. You know, and then it kind of evolves into what it is now, where you're using those experiences to help a good friend try to get the most out of himself. And it's, you know, if you really kind of think about it, I guess I do miss the playing days a little bit, but at the same time, I'm very happy doing what I'm doing right now. And, you know, we get to be outside every day and we get to see the best players in the world on a daily basis and see how they do it. You know, I get to work for one of the best guys in the game and playing wise and you know, Nick's one of the best dudes out there too. So it's, maybe a small part of me misses it, but I'm grateful for that kind of background and it's gotten me to these experiences today, you know.
Very stoic answer of you. Cause if I would be, you know, torture for me if I was that close, but then now still that close. But you talked about that partnership with, you know, Nick. You went from playing against him to helping him play. What was the original relationship like, and how has it evolved over the years to you being his right hand man?
Yeah, I guess it's almost a can't beat him, join him kind of situation, right? I first met Nick at the 2007 Canadian Amateur. He beat me in the quarterfinals. I beat Adam Hadwin. I just want to throw that in there in the round of 16. I try to give him a hard time as much as I can about that one. And then Nick beat me in the quarters and he won that week. We both played in the USAM the next week. You know, I was fortunate to be partners with him at the, you know, at the World Amateur Championship in Australia, the Four Nations Cup in Montreal, when he was number one amateur in the world. And, you know, we roomed a little bit together in the Canadian tour. And I remember where I was when, you know, him and his wife called me and told me they were going to get married. And I was probably had a few too many Sleemans at the wedding to celebrate too. So, you know, we've gone, you know, I've known Nick since 07. I've always been rooting for him and it's always been great when we get to play together and you know, I'm grateful to be on, the guy kind of under the strap and having a front row seat and trying to help him where I can. Right.
So fourth at the Memorial, 13th in the RBC Open, you know, obviously an event that, he now, is synonymous with. When you take stock of his game right now, where do you see it? Give us the scouting report of how he's playing at this part of the season.
Yeah, I think it's been a great year. You know, if you look at his finishes and kind of where he is in the points list, it's one of his best seasons he's had in, you know, 11-ish years out on the PGA Tour. Our first year together was probably the best year, and now this year is trending in that direction. It would be nice to finish it off well. You know, his game looks great week in and week out. You know, on Thursday, when it comes time to tee it up for the tournaments, his game's just in great, you know, in great condition. And you know, he's controlling his ball well, hitting a lot of fairways, chipping and putting it well. And you know, and he's when he's his best, he's kind of using his mind as his almost as his 15th club. And he's got a great attitude about things and the bogeys, whenever they happen, seldomly they kind of roll off him and he's on to the next one. And that's how he's been the last couple of weeks. And that's how he's been for a lot of the season. And that's kind of how he is at his best. And you know, it's been a good couple of weeks and a good year so far. And I think his best is still yet ahead, you know.
What is the best part of his game?
That's a good question. I mean, he does everything really well. You know, when his putter's hot, it's very good. But you know, I would say his iron game is probably his staple. He's very accurate and he can hit shots kind of both ways. And he, you know, when he's on with his iron game, it's fun to watch and it's fun to kind of, it's very fun to be out there with him. And when you know how much control he has over it, you know, he's going to put it in the spots that you're trying to hit it. And it just kind of, he makes it look easy, you know, when it's not right.
When you're talking to him about taking the next step and the next level, what's the part of his game where you see the most room for growth and improvement?
He's at that next level, right? The margins are so thin. Like, you know, look at it at Memorial last week. Like, he was pretty damn close to going home with the trophy. I mean, the best player in the world, Scottie Scheffler, beat everybody that week, and only two other guys did. And then, you know, this week in Canada, we had a chance and made a little hiccup on 17. But overall, it was a great week. And you know, I just think, when he's his best mentally, it's and he is a lot of the time. But I think, you know, the big thing that separates these guys, you know, from good to great is just the guys that are kind of at the very top of the world rankings are just very resilient week in and week out. And you know, but even the best need work on that. And I think, you know, it's so close out here and Nick could easily pop a couple off before the end of the year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does it, you know.
There's so many Canadians looking up to, you know, Nick and the other top Canadians on the tour. This is really, you know, a banner era for Canadian golf. Why do you think that is?
It's been a good few years for Canadian golf, and I think the future looks bright too. There's 5, 6, 7, 8 guys out here on tour and in these big events each week, and these guys all have a chance to win. And I feel like every week there's a Canadian or two kind of sniffing the top. I think moments like Nick provided us at Oakdale, these guys grew up and saw Weir do that, and it inspired a generation to play and to want to go out and win and create moments like that. And, these guys kind of all saw that when they were young and watching Tiger they've just kind of, they're hungry. They want to play and they do this for a living and they want to do it at the highest level. It's very competitive out here. So, I hope moments like Nick had and at Oakdale a couple of years ago will continue to kind of breed some great golf in Canada for years to come, right?
The rise of Canadian golf includes caddies. And I'm sure as people are inspired by Nick, there's people, looking to follow in the footsteps of yourself and, sliding into your DMs, looking for advice. What's the relationship like among, caddies with a Canadian passport, and what's it mean to you to be able to break into such a competitive field?
Yeah, we're pretty tight, the Canadian guys. Like the Canadian players play a lot of practice rounds together. Most of the Canadian players do have Canadian caddies, and there's a couple of them that don't, and they're kind of adopted Canadians, but they're all great dudes and working hard for their guys, and we share common backgrounds being Canadian, and we just, it's a good kind of tight bond out here, and we're rooting for each other each week. If we don't have a chance to win, we want to see one of those guys win, so it's, we room a lot together on the road with the other Canadian guys, the caddies. And it's just, we try to get to dinners and hang out together, and it's a lot of fun, and it's good to have, other guys kind of with similar backgrounds and that grew up playing junior golf in Canada and having the opportunity to be out here.
So you represent Canada, obviously, on tour, but you also represent Shelburne as well. What was it like playing golf coming out of there? And what's it like for you now when you go back?
Yeah, it was a great place to grow up. I wouldn't have had these experiences and opportunities without growing up there, I don't believe. Sam Young was an incredible junior golf coach and he had a great program, second to kind of none in the country. He taught me the fundamentals and how to play, and I think I developed a passion and work ethic by watching him and how much he loves golf, and he was the owner, head pro, and just kind of, he did everything at our golf course. It was a family-owned business, and he planted the seeds, and it was a great place to grow up and a little course where you could kind of learn how to make birdies and go out and have competitive games. And if you make birdies at home, you can go do it on the road. And instead of, growing up at a course that kind of beats you up, I think it's important for junior development to kind of be able to see those birdies on the scorecard and be able to make them and to be able to go away to different places and to do it when they need to in tournaments. Right. Grateful to be from a small hometown and to have a lot of support. I know this past week in Caledon, there's a lot of Shelburne yells from the crowd and heard my name a few times. And it's nice to feel the love and to know that people are kind of interested in what you're doing and they're out there to support myself and especially Nick. I didn't get a chance to get up to Shelburne. The weeks were kind of crazy. I had a lot of family in town that have moved away, but they came back for the week. It's a great kind of opportunity to see them But I was able to send some tickets up, and you know, Megan is Sam's daughter, now kind of runs the show up there. Sam passed away last year. So I was able to send a few tickets up, and I think some of the juniors were able to get up and watch a bit of the best players in the world live in their backyard. So yeah, again, I hope that kind of encourages them to want to work hard and to do something with golf in the future.
Well, you have had the chance to go back in the past to host your charity tournament. Why? Do it there. You could literally do it anywhere. And why, you know, with such a busy calendar that you already have, why is it important for you to have a tournament and give back in a philanthropic way?
Yeah, you know, it's actually been a couple of years since I've done it. I did it in 14, 15, and 16, kind of before coming out here. And that's kind of when I stopped playing competitively and shifted gears to caddying. That's home. You know, Shelburne will kind of, no matter where I am, that's kind of where it all started. And we had tremendous support from the community with our fundraiser. And Sam was able to keep it going for another 6 or 7 years after, being out here, it's great. It's whether it's the diabetes fundraiser or for, we had a lady reach out to us, a family friend, about the hospital in Orangeville, doing a fundraiser to help, to donate stuff for them. I really appreciate, we try to get a lot of flags signed by the guys out here and people enjoy those at fundraisers and we'll kind of pay to, help support the fundraiser and get yourself a flag signed by the Canadian boys. And they do that a lot of weeks and it's great that they can do that and kind of give back as much as they do, you know?
No question. All right. I need you, to settle a debate among all the Canadian golf sickles online. The best course in Canada is what?
Oof. I'm probably a little biased. After I finished playing and I didn't know what I wanted to do or what I was going to do after I finished. So I started caddying and I went down to Cabot Links and I caddied there for about a summer and a half. And the Links golf course, if I had to play maybe one course for the rest of my life, it would probably be Cabot Links would be right there. The Cliffs is great too. The views are great, but the Links golf course is, it's as good as, it's almost as good as it gets in Canada. I think being right there on the water and the views are amazing and the fresh kind of sea breeze. And it's just, it's a great spot. If people haven't been there, they got to get out there and check it out. It's pretty awesome.
That's high praise and a great promo for it.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on in a golf swing and different people with different body types, but excited for people to get some great counsel and advice from you. But if you could give our listeners, when they're getting ready to strike a ball, if there's one thing that they could think about or do, what would it be?
I would say probably don't swing too hard and stay within yourself. It's easy to see these guys on TV hit it to 25 feet. And then when you hit a shot from 100 yards to 40 or 50 feet, you get discouraged. I mean, these are the best players in the world, men and women that you're watching. It's all about perspective with golf. If you have too high expectations, like it's going to hurt you. And Nick's at his best when he's over prepared every week and kind of under expectation is what I feel from the seat that I have. Work on with the time that you have, work hard on your game and go to the first tee and try to enjoy it. Don't squeeze the club too tight and try to have fun.
Well, I'll have to have your voice in my head next time on, of course, because everything goes right all the time. short, long. So I don't know what is wrong with me, but maybe, you know, I can submit some shots and you can get me right. But you got us real informed and excited about the rest of the season for Nick and for your partnership, Sleeman. So thank you.
Yeah, Donovan, thanks for having me on. Maybe try aiming a little bit left until we talk again, you know, get that right shot sorted out. You'll be good.
Thanks so much to Dave, and hope that you can take his advice and reach out to him and the crew at Sleeman and get your game analyzed. He's done a great job for Nick Taylor. We love to see it, and we love talking to him as well. And lastly, you'll hear a little bit more from me on the legacy of Connor McDavid. It's been another banner year for him, an outstanding postseason. But when you are in the conversation of GOATs, the only thing matters is the hardware at the end of the season. And that's not personal accolades at the NHL Awards, which he is used to at this point. That is lifting Lord Stanley's cup. So, an essay for you on McDavid's legacy and how it will start to be defined by how the 2025 Stanley Cup final finishes. Take a listen, and thanks for listening.
I really believe you can always rewrite your narrative. You can always add a new chapter to your book.
There comes a point in every story where the central character has to face and overcome the conflict resolution ahead of them. Being a hero isn't success in the absence of failure. It's success while overcoming failure. Enter McDavid into the chat. The longtime heir apparent of the greatest player in the game title has not only lived up to, but exceeded those expectations. Personal accolades highlight real plays.
McDavid's game break! Connor McDavid scores!
And this year, best on best supremacy, saving his best player.
Sends it around. Marner waiting. Connor McDavid scores! Connor McDavid for Canada!
The Four Nations winner seemed more like a precursor of NHL playoff success, not an absolution of it. What eludes him is what seemed inevitable when the Oilers got top pick after top pick. Lord Stanley's Cup. The City of Champions used to throw parades routinely. Now the championship champagne in the city and the country has run dry.
But that's not good enough.
He fell short a year ago, but winning it in his first cup final would almost have been too easy, too clean an air. This is how it goes for great captains. Gretzky had to lose to the Islanders before he went through the island.
If it wasn't for the New York Islanders and the great players and the great team they had, I don't know if we would have ever won the Stanley Cup, because we learned both on the ice and off the ice what it took to be a champion.
2 decades later, Crosby had to lose to the Red Wings before he went through the Red Wings. And now, 2 decades later, McDavid lost to the Panthers and has a chance to go through them and win. Besides, we learned more about his championship spirit in defeat as we could have possibly in victory. We thought we knew him, evolving from the awkward airport photo to the comfort to invite us in for a home decor tour.
Welcome to our home in Edmonton. Come on in.
Even a cold tub dip in the cold to gain an extra advantage. But we've since learned he's got even more will than skill. In the last final, he was down 3-0 and forced to game 7. Recognized as the best player in the series, even in defeat, but did not feel like coming back out after the handshake line to claim his prize. He's only interested in one trophy at center ice. So now for take 2. 4 wins away from being immortalized forever. This Stanley Cup final is about a lot of things. Going back to back, Marchand getting another ring, Canada ending their cup drought. But make no mistake, above all else, this series will be a referendum on McDavid's greatness. He's not only competing against Florida, the true transcendent players are always competing against history. And when it comes to McDavid, you can't help but love to see it.